EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. I hope you're all well. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Tonight we are in the state of Pennsylvania to meet Octavian, and he has come on tonight to share a number of his Class B Bigfoot encounters. Octavian is also a practicing magician and he will be sharing a few of his occult experiences with us. Octavian is up next. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Octavian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us today and you're calling from Pennsylvania in the US.
Yes.
Now, Octavian, you have a number of encounters to share with us tonight. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, sir?
Sure. So I've been trying to think about the exact order in which this stuff happens, you know, preparing for the show. And something that I've sort of recently remembered was that as a child, I'd say up until about 7 years old, at my mother's house, when I was alone, I would just hear my name being called from all over the place by different voices, male, female. I don't know who they were, if they were human, if they weren't human. I just know that I heard my name called. And it was only in that house. And it only lasted until I was about 6 or 7. And the interesting thing is I was never afraid. That never scared me. I never had any kind of negative feelings about that. I just knew that sometimes when I sat alone, I would hear my name being called from different rooms in the house when no one else was home. So that's kind of where this starts. And then nothing really happened my sort of preteen and teenage years, except for when I was 15, my father and I took a road trip to Memphis, Tennessee. Because we're both very into Delta blues and acoustic blues, and that's a big hub for that kind of music down there. And we went on a ghost tour, and most of the ghost tour was pretty cheesy. Nothing really happened, except for the last stop, which used to be, it's a bar now, but it used to be a brothel. And they had renovated it just up to the bare minimum of code, so a lot of the paint is still there from the original brothel. A lot of the furniture is still there. A lot of the original remnants of the first business was still in that bar. So it has a lot of that residual energy. And most of that night, people were walking around this place trying to get something to communicate with them. And before everyone goes upstairs, there's a woman who takes a picture of her daughter on the stairs, and everyone else is downstairs. And when she pulls the camera back to look at the photo, on the viewfinder of the camera, there is another little girl standing next to her daughter in completely different dress, totally different hairstyle. And she's like clear as day, as solid as the actual girl. And that was pretty crazy. And then my dad and I actually stayed at that building for maybe an hour or so after everyone had left. And I had been walking around asking anything to talk to me, recording on my phone. And when we left the building, I played it back after I asked, you know, is there anyone here who would like to talk to me? There is a very clear little girl's voice saying, I will. Now, of course, as the paranormal goes, whenever you need evidence, it's gone. That audio file was on a hard drive that I can no longer get to work. I wish I still had that audio because it was probably one of the clearest EVPs I've ever listened to, but it's gone now. I had not really done a lot with the paranormal. I had gotten into music and sort of dedicated myself to that most of my early 20s and late teens. But in September of 2019, I was 23 years old, and I had always been interested in cryptids, in Bigfoot, in Dogman, and Goatman, and things like that. Where I lived in Maryland, we had the Maryland Goatman, which is a local cryptid that started in sort of like the 50s and had some heyday in the 70s. And he's still talked about, but there hasn't been a sighting or anything like that, at least to my knowledge, in many years. But I had found this group on Facebook that was Bigfoot hunters or Bigfoot investigators. And they invited me to come out with them on an investigation. Now, I used to be, I think everybody starts out this way who's into Bigfoot because of how the media portrays it. A lot of people, you know, assume it's just a flesh and blood creature that's just a big undiscovered ape in the American Northwest. But when you really look into it, you realize that there's sightings in every single state. They used to say, except for Hawaii, but there has been some rumors of sightings in Hawaii in the last 10, 15 years. But back in 2019, I went out for this Bigfoot investigation at a nature preserve. We kind of snuck in, and there wasn't much that happened on that trip, except for I was the last one in line of about four guys. And we got to this creek. And basically, a rock was thrown over my shoulder. I'm the last one in line from some unidentifiable source. This nature preserve where we were was only a couple hundred acres. So not very big. And it was in a very populated area in Maryland. It's actually really close to the NSA building in Maryland. And so the fact that I had a rock thrown at me from an unidentifiable source doing Bigfoot hunting, it really made me reevaluate my stance on Bigfoot. And after that, I had gone up to this area in northern Maryland, basically looking for Bigfoot. And this area is probably, I couldn't even tell you how big it is. I just know that when you're on the trail, you can see houses from either side of you. That's how sparsely wooded this area is. And a friend and I went up there one night to do some Bigfoot hunting. And we heard a lot of very, very strange noises. But the most definite thing was the classic being paced out of the woods by something following your footsteps. And it's just off one step. And it follows you all the way back to your car, essentially. And like I said, these are very, very sparsely wooded areas. So for something that's supposedly 7 to 10 feet tall, multiple hundred pounds, and very obvious to be there, it seemed either completely impossible or you had to rearrange how you thought of these things. I've had some other experiences in those woods, mostly audio. I've never actually seen a Bigfoot. I've never seen one, you know. I've had a lot of experiences with what they would call Class B scenarios where you hear wood knocks. I've heard plenty of wood knocks out in the woods being screamed at. Actually, in that same nature preserve I was at, I was with some friends, and we got screamed at, and we heard what I could only describe to you as about a 200-pound owl. And the owl was coughing. Now, owls don't cough. That's never been something that I've ever heard. But it was something making the sound of an owl and then coughing. And when we followed that sound, it took us essentially to a stick structure, which I'm still on the fence about whether or not that's even related to Bigfoot or not. But it is interesting that that is where that took us. Later that night, we were screamed at. And then up until now, I've had a lot of experiences of just being... I've had things thrown at me. I've had things growl at me, again, in really sparsely wooded areas. I've been followed out of the woods. And it's really led me to this hypothesis that especially when you look at Bigfoot from the eyes of an esoteric point of view and a folklore point of view, these things have much more in common with spiritual entities from folklore and the esoteric than they could ever have with anything physical. So that's my most interesting encounters. I've had a lot of encounters in my personal practice of the esoteric that I don't know if people would call it paranormal. It's a lot of synchronicities and a lot of very, very mundane things happening at very specific times that would lead one to feel like it wasn't really a mundane encounter. It was something much more strange using a mundane object or being to get its message across, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's my encounters.
And you said you've had a lot of occult encounters.
Yes. I've always been interested in magic and the paranormal, but I was actually investigating the paranormal a lot earlier. And then in 2021, I had a kind of a crazy psychedelic experience, and it made me realize that I kind of need to take my pseudo-spirituality a little bit more serious. And so I started investigating magic. And what I realized is that there is so many connections between the paranormal and magic that no one is talking about, that no one wants to acknowledge, because, you know, in the paranormal, there's such a you're either weirdly a materialist in the sense that, you know, everything is just blood and cells and organs and there's nothing more to it, or there's a lot of fundamental Christianity that is, you know, interlinked with the paranormal. So when people hear magic and the occult, they immediately think it's all demons and devils and black magic and things like that. And so they want to keep that out of the paranormal. But what I have found is that by using magic to investigate the paranormal, it puts you in more control of the scenario and the situation than you would otherwise. And what I have also kind of realized is a lot of people who experience the paranormal not by their own volition, meaning that they're kind of accosted by it, they could really benefit from using some spiritual and esoteric techniques to keep these things at bay, or at least put yourself in control of them. My specialty and what I do a lot of my research on is Solomonic and ceremonial magic, as well as traditional witchcraft and Greco-Roman and Egyptian magic, which basically... there's a really, really strong lineage that connects stuff all the way back from ancient Sumer to what the grimoirists and the magicians of Renaissance Europe were doing. And when you look at those methods of evoking spirits and how to handle them and how to communicate with them, you realize that if you put that in a haunted house scenario, it would be very, very helpful to people who are experiencing these things and want either a different kind of experiences, or they just don't want to experience at all. Exorcisms don't have to be done by priests. They don't have to be done by some superior spiritual person. They can be done by anyone, as long as... Huh, that's really weird. Something is walking around my room, but is unseen.
I can hear that.
Yeah, there's no one in here but me.
Spooky.
And my cat's not in here either. So that's interesting. We'll add that to my experiences. I guess my house is haunted. My girlfriend actually refuses to stay in here with me. I have to go down to her if I want to see her. She won't come and spend the night here or stay at this house at all, because the first time she came here, she said that there was a really negative energy. And I think that very same night, we were putting together my bed. I had just moved up here. And while we were putting that together, we heard something walking up my stairs. And it hasn't happened too often, especially when I'm here by myself. I don't really have a lot of experiences, but it'll happen every once in a while. And I do a lot of magic in my house, and I have my own rituals and things like that that I do. So, you know, that probably accounts for some of it. But, well, that's really weird. Anyways, where was I? So, yeah, when you look at the esoteric and you take some of the techniques, and really what magic is, if people aren't aware, it's a technology. It is a series of techniques used to communicate with spirits and to get what you want done in the world that you may not be able to do yourself. Or if you tried, it would probably take you years what could be done with magic in days, if not, you know, weeks or months. But when you look at those techniques and you look at what ghost hunters are doing, what people in the Bigfoot community are doing, even what people in the UFO community are doing, it's the same techniques. They just go by different names, and the sort of reason behind why the paranormal people are doing it is very different from why the magicians and witches are doing it, but they're doing the same thing. When people are gifting, as the Bigfoot community likes to say, when they're doing that, there's no difference between that and making offerings to nature spirits in order to have a good harvest for your farm, or to make sure that, you know, nothing happens to your house or your livestock. There's no difference whatsoever. People do that with Solomonic magic. After they've evoked a spirit and they've gotten the spirit to do what they want in the world, they will often give that spirit offerings as kind of a thank you for that service. And Bigfoot has so much more in common with spirits than they do with monkeys. I mean, the amount of times people say that they have Bigfoot walking around on their roofs, but then they go out and there's nothing there, and there's no dents in the roof. That's just not possible. I have a friend who did telephone work, and he's about less than 200 pounds, and he makes dents in roofs. The weird lights that people see that are often associated with Bigfoot, that's usually how fairies and fairy-like entities were described and reported back in folkloric days, and even in magical texts. They will talk about spirits appearing as just orbs of light in the circle or in the triangle or wherever you're supposed to be evoking them. There are many, many examples of UFO encounters and UFO stories that mimic the fairy lore of, you know, England and Ireland and Europe so many years before it. John Keel talks about this. Joshua Cutchin talks about this. There's a lot of people that are looking into these other subjects and seeing all of the parallels between that and what people experience in the paranormal. And I started to look into that. And there are so many techniques that ghost hunters could be using to get a better response from the spirits that they're investigating. And a lot of it has to do with changing your mindset. I think that I get a lot of flack for this. I don't care about evidence. I don't care about proving any of this. I don't care about, you know, the mainstream world knowing about this stuff. I don't think it's going to validate it the way people think it is. I don't think they're going to get the recognition and the fame that they think they're going to for proving it. I don't think they ever will prove it, because I really do believe these things are spiritually based. And I don't mean religious. I mean that they are just incorporeal entities and phenomena that sometimes appears physical. And this happens in magic all the time. When you read the old grimoires, then you see that these things have really, really specific physical attributes when summoned. They appear physically to these magicians. And there's not a lot of metaphors there. You know, I believe that what they wrote down is what they were seeing, what they were experiencing. You can see parallels to certain paranormal phenomena in certain magical texts, in the Luchadarium or the Heptameron, which is a Renaissance grimoire that precedes the Lesser Key of Solomon. There is a mention of when the magician is trying to evoke the spirit. There are a series of different phenomena that appear trying to get the magician to get out of the circle, basically making it very easy to get to them and put them in a lot of danger. The circle is obviously consecrated on the grounds, so that way when you step inside it, you're protected. But there's a mention of children standing outside the circle, trying to beckon the magician out of the circle. there's mention of large, like, lions and tigers and bears and things like that appearing outside the circle, trying to scare the magician out of the circle. But the children specifically, that one's really interesting because that lines up so, so closely with black-eyed kid stories, either being tried to get into the house or lure experiencers out of their house or out of their safety. So you can see that these things have been there for so, so long, and they've just been sort of transmuted into a different context. So what I do on my show is I talk to magicians and authors of magic, and I sort of write down certain aspects of what they're talking about. And then when I interview paranormal experiencers, I correlate the two things, and I have found so much there that can benefit both paranormal experiencers and magicians. But back to my own experiences with that, I have had a deer basically run up on me in the middle of the night, in the middle of September, well before hunting season, while doing a ritual. I have had knocks on, you know, wood knocks in response to doing rituals in the woods. I've heard plenty of footsteps and things around me. Actually, just the other night, I was doing a ritual in my temple room, and I got to a certain part where all of a sudden the room basically sounded like there was like 20 people in the room. There was no one else there. It was just me. But the floors were creaking, and there was shuffling and all kinds of things. So it's a lot of stuff like that. And I think a lot of people would probably be really frightened, and they don't want that kind of thing because it makes them feel unsafe. But to me, it's just confirming. It's confirming to know that what I am doing has an effect on our world, the spiritual world, that the two worlds are kind of intermingling and interacting with each other in a way that I have some hand in. I want more people that are experiencing hauntings and things like that to look at some of these methods and realize that they do have power, and they do have the ability to control it and to get rid of it if they want to.
And of course, there's all different types of magic, and it is something which it is very widely used across the world. To our listeners who have quite a limited understanding of magic and the magic of practice, a lot of times people only, you know, really know about black magic and Satanism, but there are many different forms of magic. What would you class what you do as?
So I would class what I do as I engage in devotional polytheism as well as traditional witchcraft and what they would call ritual or ceremonial magic, and that is using invocations to contact entities. There's a lot of nuance to that, and I really encourage anyone who's interested in that to do their research and to look for the traditional aspects of that and not the sensationalized. I mean, looking at the stuff from basically early antiquity, that's especially in the Greek and Egyptian and Roman worlds about 1700 years ago with the PGM or the Greek magical papyri. And then all of the grimoires and magical texts from that time up until about the late 1700s, early 1800s. And the best way to describe that is it is in a Christian paradigm because the people of Europe in that time were mostly Christian, and that was the predominant religion of that time. It was very dangerous to be of any other religion in that time. And it's using Christian forces, names and of God and angels and things like that to summon what we would call chthonic spirits. I think a lot of people would probably call them demons. And when you read the grimoires, you will see that they don't have as much in common with what the Bible would say about demons. Not to say that they're not dangerous and they don't have ill intentions. Some of them certainly do. They are a lot more nuanced than people would think. And you're not worshiping them. There is no devotional worship of these deities whatsoever. There are people who do that, and I don't want to throw any shade to them. That is not my practice. I do not engage with those entities like that. But they do have offices, they have abilities and things that they can do in the world that, if controlled properly using these certain techniques, then they can make the life of the magician a lot easier and a lot better. And chthonic spirits are not the only spirits that have this ability. Angels have offices. Celestial spirits have offices. I work in an animistic point of view. So in my opinion, everything has a spirit, and that includes nature. So nature spirits, spirits of trees, spirits of flowers, of plants, fairies, dwarves, gnomes, all those spirits of folklore, they are spoken of in a very real context in magic, and they can be contacted. I would call it a reciprocal relationship can be formed with those entities. So that way you get something from them and they get something from you. That's usually, you know, anything from incense to certain foods, and they have abilities that they can do for you. Obviously, there are a lot of things to consider with protecting yourself, and there are a plethora of protection methods used when contacting these things and when engaging with these things. I have a number of spirits that work on my behalf specifically for protection. I have anointing oils. I have incenses that specifically ward out negative spirits and things like that. I have a lot of preliminary invocations that I use to sort of cleanse the area of any kind of spirits that do harm or are negative in any way towards me. So these things, I think that's a lot of the people's fear is, you know, how dangerous it is. It is dangerous. It absolutely has a danger to it, but it's more dangerous than every time you get in the car, every time you get on a plane, every time you really walk down the street. And as long as you do your research and you are careful and you don't try and take too many chances, because there's a lot of things that you could do to get results, but they are dangerous and they can lead to destruction. And so as long as you're smart about it and you do your research and you know what is real and what is not imaginary, but what is put on and what is kind of modern in the sense that it doesn't have any basis in history or tradition. That's the stuff I sort of move away from. I like my traditional stuff because it's been shown through so many years of people doing it that it does work, and that it's a complete system, meaning that it has its protections, it has its guarding aspects to it, and it does get results. It considers protection, it considers spiritual and physical protection, it considers the kind of spirits you're contacting, it considers what kind, you know, who else is going to be affected by these spirits when they are working on your behalf, or what can happen if they decide to not work on your behalf and cause you harm, which can happen and does happen frequently. But as long as you listen to your intuition and really do your research, read a lot. Most of this is reading. And obviously there's a lot of practice involved, but reading is very important. Then you'll be okay. And if you have an interest in this stuff enough that you want to do it, there's plenty of resources to get started. Obviously, if you're just interested in reading, that's honestly a safer option. If you can be happy with just reading about it and listening to podcasts, then that's going to be the best thing for you. If you have an interest in doing these things and using these techniques to see a different side of life, then there are plenty of resources out there for you to use and work in this whole world safely.
And you partake in conjuring type magic?
Yes. My specialty is contacting spirits that have offices that will work on my behalf and help me in my life with reciprocation of services or goods on my behalf, meaning I give them something and they give me something. There is no selling of my soul. There is no pact. There is no contract. There's nothing like that. It is much more freeform than that. And there's not so much of an obligation.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
And there's a lot of preparation that would go into one of these rituals. It's not just something you can take your mat up and draw a big chalk circle on the floor and start reading from a book. It takes time to prepare for all this.
Yes, it does. Very much so. And that is something that a lot of people in modern magical systems don't take into account. But in traditional Solomonic magic, there is a period of... Some grimoires have 3 days, some grimoires have 7 days, most have 9 days. And that is 9 days of fasting, mostly for the first seven, it's no meat. And then the last three, it's only bread and water after sundown. Every day, rigorous praying multiple times a day, ritual baths, and reading and consecrating your instruments. Everything has to be consecrated, blessed, and sort of exercised of all its previous uses and intentions, so that way you have a clean slate with all your instruments. And then on the day of evocation, you would have your places already picked out. You can either draw your circle on the floor, or you can have one on like a canvas, so that way you can take it with you and put it wherever you want. That's what I have, as I have a canvas. And you would go through the list of invocations that are in the particular book that you're using. And you would do it for as long as you need to until you get a spirit to show up. And it can take a long time. It can take hours. And I don't mean 2-3 hours. I mean, I have heard plenty of magicians, they are there for 8+ hours trying to get a spirit to show up. And a lot of times nothing happens, but there are times when things happen. So I have yet to sort of do one of these traditional grimoire operations. Now that I have my own place, I'm gearing up to do one. I'm planning on doing one with what they call the Olympic spirits. And they are not the Greek gods. They are celestial spirits. They are kind of like if the seven archangels are the prime ministers of countries, then the Olympic spirits are the governors of the states. They're much easier to contact. They are described as being extremely benevolent, extremely happy to help mankind, very, very beneficial to us, and wanting to help. And so I'm preparing to do that 9-day rite of fasting, sexual abstinence, praying, consecrating my tools in order to speak with one of these spirits.
And what would you be looking to gain from this? Like, what would you specifically ask for?
So the first operation is just going to be a getting to know you kind of deal. It's me introducing myself to the spirit and telling the spirit that right now I just want to form a working relationship with them. The spirit that I plan on contacting is a lunar spirit. And in magical lore, the moon and spirits of the moon, they primarily work in the psychic realm, meaning that they can impart psychic abilities to the magician. They can help you build up your intuition. They can help you with your clairvoyance, your clairaudience. And that is something that I desperately want to have. And so after a few preliminary meetings with the spirit, when I feel comfortable and when I feel that there's been a relationship built with a spirit, then I will ask for either methods of increasing my psychic and intuitive abilities, or just asking the spirit to give me those abilities. Usually that comes in the way of a necklace or some sort of something that you can wear that the spirit imbues with that power. It then becomes a talisman. And for those of you who don't know what a talisman is, it is essentially a piece of jewelry or something that you wear. It doesn't have to be. It can be really anything that is imbued with specific powers from a specific spiritual source. So in the Key of Solomon, there are a number of these talismans, each for a different planet. And that's another thing that spirits from a traditional magic point of view, they are sort of governed by the seven classical planets. And that is Mars, the Sun, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, and I'm forgetting what the rest are. And I'm sure people are wondering, well, you know, what about the other planets? And the reason why those planets are not considered is because those are newly discovered planets and they were not seen with the naked eye when these forms of magic were being created and used. So there's a lot of timing that goes into this. Each planet has an hour that it works in. So when you're doing these operations, you look for what planet governs the spirit you're trying to talk to, and then what day of the week that planet is in charge of, and then what hour in that day is the best time for that spirit to appear, given their planetary associations. So Monday is the day of the moon, and with this specific system, the spirit should be contacted in the early morning and should not be kept more than an hour in its planetary time. So it shouldn't go over into another planet. I've heard a lot of people say that this doesn't matter, that you can keep the spirit for longer and they don't mind. I have yet to see whether that's true or not. But yeah, to answer your question, this specific operation and the upcoming operations will be about getting the ability to better perceive spirits physically.
Interesting. So it's not like, you know, you're asking to be rich and famous, all that kind of stuff. It's very small development more than anything.
Yeah, there's definitely precedent for money magic, and there are plenty of spirits that can give you money. The caveat to that, and something that people don't realize, is that people often ask, well, you know, if there's spirits that can give you money, why haven't you won the lottery yet? The lottery is really specific because, you know, the spirits are also really specific because just because a spirit has the ability to give money doesn't mean it can give you money from the future. So if you don't know, if your spirit that you're talking to gives money can't foresee the future, then it can't give you those lottery numbers. And it really isn't part of its office. The other thing is, spirits work with what you already have. So for example, if you have no stocks, if you have no other income except for your minimum wage job, there's no way for a spirit to just make money appear out of nothing. You have to have some path for the spirit to work in to get you what you want in a reasonable and realistic way. Some of the results that I've gotten have actually been for my podcast. It's been getting certain guests to come on that otherwise would be very hard to get on, mostly authors and magicians of that type. I've done a few money magic as far as getting a job. Most specifically, I did a ritual to the pagan goddess Hecate, who is what I would call my matron. She is sort of, I do a lot with her. She's my main spiritual ally that I call on quite a bit. And I did a little spell and ritual to her to get a job in the veterinary industry. Well, I got a call back from the veterinary company that I was going to try and work for, and they wanted me to come in for an interview. So I agreed, and that interview day came. I woke up 45 minutes late for the interview. I had no clean clothes. I had to go to the Marshall, like the clothing store that was right next to the veterinary office, get new clothes. I showed up over an hour late for this working interview, and I knew I would never get that job. There's no way they would hire someone who's over an hour late and looked the way I did for that interview. And lo and behold, not only did they hire me, originally they were going to only give me part-time, but they gave me a full-time position about 6 months earlier than they were supposed to. In my opinion, that was absolutely a magical result. There's just no way that should have happened.
So it's not a case of I pops a genie and you're granted free wishes and it's there. It's something which tips things in your favor. It's a case of you can't win a lottery if you don't buy a lottery ticket.
Exactly. You have to have the foundations in place to build your empire, so to speak. It's not just going to pop up out of nowhere. You have to have the roads in which the things you want can travel down to get to you.
this kind of stuff, it probably isn't for people which have no interest in spending hours, their head in a book. If someone has zero patience, this probably isn't for you, is it?
No. There is a lot of patience. There is a lot of sort of waiting and sitting around and doing a lot of nothing. So if you can't get into that and you're only about instant gratification, there are certain sort of modern magical techniques that might be of your interest, but I can't vouch for their effectiveness. I've never tried that approach. I have been of the traditional long periods of preparation for this thing that may not even happen.
What about something like sigil magic?
So that is, in my opinion, that's more of one of the modern techniques. I've never used it. That would kind of go into the chaos magic world. I have a few friends who swear by it and have used it for many years and have, from what they've told me, gotten great results from it. And I think the reason why it's never been something that I've been into is because I've done so much research on the traditional methods of magic and how these things have been done for thousands of years. And I see how sigil magic works, and it just flies in the face of so much of the longstanding traditional theory that it's really hard for me to sort of get my mind out of that traditional mindset to try something as sort of experimental as sigil magic. Now, spirits have sigil. They have symbols that they are actually quite bound to. And in ritual magic, if you are trying to get a spirit to show up and it's just not coming, you know, you're doing all the invocations, you're there for hours, it's just not showing up, there is a technique where you can actually take their sigil, which is written on either parchment or on the corresponding metal that spirit is identified with, and you can put it on a fire, either on charcoals or, you know, an actual blazing fire. And the theory is that they are so tied to that sigil that the burning of the sigil actually affects them physically, and they will come to you just to get you to stop burning their sigil. That is the kind of sigil stuff that I am familiar with. The idea of taking an intention, something you want, and then writing it out and taking out all the syllables and the vowels and things like that, so you just have a few letters and you turn it into a shape. I've never done that approach. I think it's probably effective for certain people. But again, I can't really speak on that just because I don't have any experience with that.
Yeah, I think when it comes to chaos magic, it's more of a modern thing and less traditional.
Yeah. You know, Osman Spare, who kind of created that method, really, really smart guy, amazing artist. And I think he was a very, very competent magician. But what I will say about chaos magic that I really like is the idea of basically going into a different mindset and believing that mindset temporarily and seeing what that mindset can give you, and then completely abandoning it and going off to something else, and being able to not being permanently married to an idea and just using it for what it's good for and then sort of putting it on a shelf. I think that's an interesting concept, and I've actually tried it, and that's one of the things that brought me to ritual magic in the first place. I was very against the idea of Christian magic. I was much more in line with the pagan stuff, and I still am. But when I read a book called Condensed Chaos by Phil Hine, he really lays out that theory really comprehensively, and I understood it a lot better than I had before. And I tried that with ritual magic and Christian ritual magic. Now, I kind of failed because I'm still in that paradigm today, and I probably will be for the rest of my life, so I didn't pick it up and put it down. But I found my peace with it, and I am not a Christian. I don't identify as a Christian, but I am not opposed to using Christian entities to help my life. And I do not hold the worldview that the Christian God is the most all-powerful God, nor do I believe that using other spirits outside of the Christian paradigm is against the Christian paradigm, if that makes sense. So without that idea of picking up a belief and being able to put it down, I don't know where I'd be today, to be honest. I contribute a lot of my foundation in magic to Condensed Chaos, the book. Even though I don't follow that path, it gave me a lot of ideas that blossomed into what I do now.
So you say you do a lot of these rituals in your own house. What would you do to protect yourself? Because obviously you live there. Is it a good idea to have these energies in your own house?
What I do, I feel like it is good and it's beneficial because the majority of what I do are working with pagan deities from the Greco-Egyptian pantheon and having a reciprocal relationship where I give them an offering and I ask them to help me with certain areas of my life. They have elements of protection built into them, those devotional rituals that I have. Like I said, I have spirits that specifically work on my protection. So in my opinion, because I have so much research and understanding the theory of what I'm doing, I have yet to feel any kind of danger from having this stuff in my home. Now, I'm also not contacting demons. I'm not contacting chthonic spirits. I have had my fingers burned. And that is a term a lot of magicians use that does happen. I can give one instance. There is a ritual in the Greek magical papyri that is called the Headless Rite. And if any of your listeners know of Crowley and Thelema, they will probably identify this as the Bornless Rite. Now, his version is varied and different, slightly different than the traditional operation that is in the Greek magical papyri. I was doing this as a daily invocation. A lot of people use what is called the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And if your listeners don't know what that is a calling of the four major archangels to sort of come into your life and banish all negative energy and spirits and bad vibes from your life and sort of sanitize your life spiritually. And that was popularized by first the Golden Dawn, but Thelema does use it. And if they're interested in that, there's a whole rabbit hole of information that they can go down to find more information on that. But I don't do that. That's never been something that I've done. Not that I'm not a fan of it, not that I don't believe in it. It's just not really part of what I do. But the Headless Rite is, first and foremost, it's an exorcism. There is a lot of parts of it that basically say to whatever spirit you're supposedly exorcising, you know, release this person. And you can either say your name or someone else's name, release him from the demon who restrains him or her. But also, it is a command. It is an invocation basically saying, I am not only Moses, I am a Pharaoh, I am also multiple gods, and any spirits who are around me, you're going to listen because I am these things and I am more powerful than you. I'm sure people are going to listen to that and say, well, you're not. So why would the spirits listen to you? It's because in traditional magical systems, spirits are not given omnipotence. They don't know everything and anything. They have a specific avenue of information and knowledge that they know about. And anything outside of that, they aren't really privy to. So with a lot of these invocations, you are putting on a false identity. And the idea is that these spirits don't know that you're not one of these entities that you're saying you are. So, but back to my story, I was doing this invocation every day, three times a day for many days. And I was first doing it in an apartment that my room was the size of a bathroom stall. I barely was ever there. I just slept there, really. But I would do this invocation in this room I did it about a week. I had been staying at my grandparents' house the next week, and I come back, and my roommates are furious with me. They say, you know, have you been leaving food in your room? Have you been, you know, leaving drinks in your room? What's going on? I'm like, no, I've never left anything in there because I never eat in my room. I usually eat in the kitchen or in the living room, but I don't eat in my room. And they say, well, go into your room. I said, okay. So I go into my room, and there are, really cannot exaggerate, 1,000 flies all over my walls. No idea how they got there. No idea where they came from. My windows were all closed. My door was closed. It was sort of just like they came out of nowhere. And I perceived this as a response from some spirit for me trying to exorcise it from the apartment. That was not what I was trying to do. What I was trying to do was use that invocation as sort of a buildup of spiritual authority, basically building myself up and letting spirits know that I do have power and that I do have the ability to command them and ensure my safety. Well, apparently his spirit didn't like that. So there are all these flies in my room. I got them out and it never happened again. But I had to sort of put that practice on pause momentarily. So when I moved into this house, I started doing it again every day, three times a day. And last week I was out of the house. I went and stayed at my girlfriend's house and came home the next day. And my neighbor furiously knocks on my door and she says, you know, you had a fire here last night. I was like, what are you talking about? And she said that the on my porch, there were planters, basically metal racks with dirt in them for you to put your, you know, little flowers and things like that. And she said that a fire had just started in this dirt planter and almost engulfed the whole house. And someone driving by ran up to her door and knocked on her door and let her know. And they had to call the fire department and have it put out. I wasn't home. No idea how this fire started. I perceived that as a response from something that really didn't like what I was doing and letting me know. So I have since not, you know, I've put that practice away and I've come to sort of really realize that it's not an everyday thing. It should be done in extreme cases where you really don't have any other option but to use this very powerful invocation to clear out any spirits that are around you. So yeah, I have been in a few negative experiences and I've been in some dangerous experiences regarding my magic. I've never been physically harmed. I've never had anyone else physically harmed from what I do. Pretty much everything I do is beneficial to me and those around me. But sometimes, you know, you just get a response from something that doesn't like you very much and doesn't like what you're doing. And they let you know. And you just have to be smart about it and use your instincts to know what to do when you get that kind of response.
A lot of people practice one form of magic or another. People out there which don't always have the best interests at heart for you. Things happen to them. You know, they find strange objects around their house. For people which are having these, you know, strange little things happen, what are signs they can look for if they have been hexed or they, you know, they have been cursed by someone that they've maybe angered or they've rejected?
You know, what's really interesting about that is I don't actually know because I've never been hexed. I've never been cursed and I've never had any reason to look into that form of magic. I know a lot of people have this problem where they feel like everyone's trying to hex and curse them. And I guess I'm just lucky that I live a life where I don't have to worry about that, where I don't make enemies that easily, or I have people who I feel want to harm me magically. So I've never actually had to do a lot of research in that. Like I said, I have spirits that I work with specifically to keep this from happening and protect me. So if you work with spirits and you have a reason to believe that someone is hexing you, you can ask your spirits to protect you and to keep you safe from these things. But, and there's plenty of books and research that one can do on hexings. There's a really good book called Protection and Reversal Magic by a guy named Jason Miller, who writes mostly about this actually in that book. So I would implore people to, you know, look into these books and do their research. But that's never been an area that I've had a lot of experience with. Luckily, no one's ever really magically attacked me before, or at least I've never felt like anyone was magically attacking me.
How widely used would you say magic is? I mean, when it comes to, say, like businesses and the media, you sometimes see logos which have certain symbols on them, whether it be the sun or, you know, whatever. How widely do you think it's used to influence people?
I'll be honest, I think there are a lot of people who talk the talk but don't walk the walk, as they say. I really feel as though people are using the symbols and the iconography and the vocabulary as sort of an aesthetic. I don't actually believe a lot of people are doing magic. I think that there's a very small percentage of the world that is magically engaged. And the reason I feel this way is because the people that I've talked to, so many people who, when I bring up really, really, in my opinion, obvious magical techniques and methods, they have no idea what I'm talking about. A lot of people don't have much experience outside of crystals and tarot. And there's nothing wrong with that. I use crystals. I use tarot. But a lot of people, that's where their safe space is. That's where they like to be, is in these sort of minimal but effective to them magical divination areas. But I don't just see a lot of people that I suspect are summoning spirits to attack other people or manipulate large swaths of the population. I will say, from what I do know about magic and spirits, I don't think that Taylor Swift is demonic, but I absolutely believe that she is working with very, very powerful forces to make her life better. Because what we have seen from her is just spooky in far as how powerful, how quickly she has gotten that power and how talented she really is. I don't think that she's, like I said, she's not demonic. She's not the devil. She's not, you know, putting curses on people or, you know, manipulating people. But I do think that she is using magical methods to make her life better faster in ways that a lot of people probably wouldn't be able to. I don't think that Hollywood are a bunch of Satanists. I don't like Hollywood. I don't, you know, agree with anything they have to say, but I don't think that they're all magicians. I don't think that there's a magical population in politics. There's just, there would be certain signs, there would be certain things we'd be seeing that people who are into this stuff would be able to know. And that's not to say that magic hasn't been used in political worlds. If you're familiar with John Dee and Edward Kelly, who supposedly were working with and contacted the Enochian angels, in some of their writings, they talk about the angels giving them methods specifically to work in politics, to manipulate and maneuver political agendas and ideas and actions with magical means. So there is history of using it this way. I just don't feel like it's being utilized to a wide degree nowadays. The interest in it is really widespread. I think there's a lot of people who like to read about it, and there's a lot of armchair magicians, and I think there's a lot of people who like to dabble in certain areas of it. And like I said, I see a lot of tarot use, I see a lot of crystal use, I see a lot of divination and things like that. One thing that I have noticed over the time that I've been working in it is that modern magic has removed a lot of the usage of spirits in its systems. Most modern magic is using the power of intention or imagination or just the mind of the practitioner to get things done. I think that spirits are coming back in vogue to a certain extent. The modern magical world, we are experiencing kind of a grimoire renaissance where these new grimoires are coming out every day. New grimoires are being discovered and translated and released by different publishers who, you know, if you're interested in that, I have a lot of that on my show. There is a sort of rebirth of Greco-Egyptian interest. There's a couple classes that essentially take certain spells from the Greek magical papyri and breaks it down so that way it's easier for people to get around in their minds. There are a number of publications coming out using certain aspects of the Greek magical papyri and making them modernized. There are lots of spirits and gods that are utilized in that work specifically that are becoming much more in vogue, one of them being Helios, the sun god. So it's interesting that you bring that up. So things moving around in the occult world that mirrors traditional techniques and aspects. But it is interesting how little spirits have been utilized in the last 100, 110, 115 years of magic.
So anyone with even a basic form of interest in this kind of thing, your show would certainly be worth listening to, Strange Dominions. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your guests you've had on there?
Yeah, so I have had a lot of occultists, a lot of occult authors, Jack Grail, B.J. Swain, Keldon Mercury, Allison Tchaikovsky, and then a couple paranormal investigators a woman by the name of Charisse O. Williams, who wrote a book about using witchcraft to investigate the paranormal. Another gentleman whose name is escaping me, who also wrote a book about using magic to investigate the paranormal. I'm currently writing a book on using magic to investigate the paranormal, specifically Bigfoot. I've had Bigfoot experiencers. I've had ghost experiencers. I haven't had a lot of UFOs on my show, actually. That is one area that I'm very keen to get into. But yeah, if you have an interest in magic, my show is for you. If you have an interest in the paranormal, my show is for you. And if you have an interest in how the two are related, that is what the entire premise of my show is about. Seeing what the connectivity is between magic and modern paranormal phenomena.
You're on just about every platform?
Yes. Everything, anywhere you can find podcasts, we are on. We are on all social media sites, I think, except for Twitter.
Oh, you want to get onto X?
Yeah, I've been considering it. I avoided Twitter for so long because I found it to be extremely toxic and dangerous in a lot of ways, but I might change my mind on X.
If you've got a podcast, yeah, I would suggest it. Of course, it's toxic. I mean, it's social media, but it is what it is. But it's definitely worth it. You can connect with so many people. So when did your interest begin?
It's been there from the very beginning, but I didn't really consider the idea of practicing it until 2021. So I was about 25 when I really started to dabble in it. But I had written about it in my music. I had always watched movies and film and TV about the occult and always had it sort of in my mind as a fantastical thing. The few times I tried to get into it as a teenager were not very successful, mainly because the people I was learning from had no idea what they were talking about. So nothing they ever told me to do ever worked. And when I would try and read the traditional stuff, I couldn't understand the language, because for a 16-year-old who doesn't have any understanding of sort of Renaissance and Middle Age vernacular and how they wrote and spoke, it can feel like a foreign language, especially because a lot of the stuff was in Latin and it was translated to English, and you can never really trust the translations on a lot of the stuff. At least you couldn't. It's gotten a lot better now, but when I was younger, a lot of it just didn't make any sense to me. And I was always trying to find someone to teach me, like a mentor. And I kept running into people who kept saying, well, if I have to teach you, then you shouldn't be learning in the first place. And that just drove me up a wall. So I kept starting and stopping and starting and stopping. And finally, when I was 25, I really, really put my nose to the grindstone and looked into it myself. And almost immediately, I saw the parallels between magic and the paranormal. And I just decided to start this podcast. And that has been an absolute tool for me to, you know, I get to talk to a lot of people that most people never would about the occult. And I've had a lot of people who've given me techniques and methods and improved my personal practice. And I feel like I've progressed really quickly for someone who, you know, doesn't have a long-standing background in it as some people do.
What would you say your, not best episode, but probably a good starter episode if someone wants to come and listen to you?
My episodes with Luke Bell, I think they're very early on. I would say I can't remember the exact number. I think it's like 6 and 7 or 7, 8. Those I would highly recommend as starting with. The interviews he's done with me as a co-host, mainly the one with Daniel Harms, who is a translator and wrote translated a couple Cunning Man grimoires. The Grimoire Encyclopedia interview I did with David Rankin, very, very good interview. And there's been a couple other, if you look up Luke Bell online, you'll probably find all the episodes with him in it. So those would be my recommendations for people who want to get started with my podcast. You can start anywhere. I have stuff on ghosts, Bigfoot, other cryptids, some stuff on UFOs, but not as much as I would like. And then just some stuff that is just strictly magic.
Great stuff. Strange Dominions. Have you a website?
Yes, strangedominionspodcast.com.
Perfect. Wonderful stuff. I will put links to Strange Dominions podcast in the description below.
Again, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Octavian, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me anytime.
Okay, keep in contact, all right?
I will.
And I will talk to you soon.
All right, have a great night.
You too, and watch out for whatever you've got going around your room.
I will.
Take care for now.
You too.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast,
you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Octavian for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.